Ghosts are real. That much I know.
Hello and welcome to episode 87 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Prochko and Angie Han. So this week we have a big Crimson Peak episode for you. The hot topic is going to be talking about the Crimson Peak marketing campaign and why it might have been a bit misleading, and then we're going to jump into our full review of the movie. So first off, marketing. Angie, it's all yours.
All right, so if you saw the trailers for Crimson Peak and just, you know, generally took in the marketing for it, I think that you would have a very reasonable expectation that what you're in for is a haunted house horror movie. I mean, the trailers really play at the house, like, and how, oh, the house breathes and, like, you know, it can't let go of things. And, like, there's a lot of stuff in there that makes you think, okay, this is going to be a haunted house movie only set in, like, you know, an old-timey gothic mansion. That's not what this movie turned out to be. Having seen it, it's really more like a gothic romance. Like, basically, Jane Eyre with ghosts is the way that I've been describing it to people. And I really think that the misleading marketing is, A, you know, kind of dinging it. Or, like, I think the misleading marketing is making critics not like it as much because they're expecting the wrong things. And I think it's going to do the same for general audiences and just... I'm just really worried. I've seen so many critics that are complaining, like, oh, this isn't that scary, it's not that effective as a horror movie, and it's like, well, yeah, because it's not a horror movie, but at the same time, I can't get mad at those people for faulting it for that, because they're just reviewing the movie that they thought it was trying to be.
Well, for me, I totally understand, I do think the marketing leans more into the horror aspect than the romance aspect, but I do think it's a horror movie, and not just because it's ghosts and a haunted house. It's just that it's a kind of horror movie we don't tend to see very much anymore, in that it is, you know, it's a gothic horror movie. But it's a gothic horror movie with Del Toro twist. There's a lot of gore. It's not all just kind of like, is it all in this woman's head because women? And I really liked that, and I really responded to it, but I do agree. I actually, for my review for a spinoff at Comic Book Resources, I pointed out that it is... not the movie the trailer is expecting, but I was fine with that.
I don't know if I agree with that, but I also don't know if it's because I just knew so much about the movie too, having been on the set visits. It's like when that trailer came out, that's kind of what I expected. And also, I mean, what do you really expect them to do? He made a gothic horror romance. I mean, they're obviously not going to market the romance element more so than the horror stuff. Otherwise, well, they would never get an audience. But... I mean, I thought that the trailer actually had a pretty decent balance of the horror and romance compared to what we got in the movie. I mean, it seems pretty on par to me.
I mean, you guys are right. It definitely has horror elements, but I do think that the movie, at least the movie I saw, and just based on my experience of it, it seemed much more tilted toward romance and drama than horror. And I think that the trailers make it look like it tilts the other way. And so that's the part that I'm not really sure about. I mean, yeah, like, Christy was saying that, like, after you see the movie and you watch the trailers, you're like, okay, it's all there. But the trailers make it look like it's going to be, like, wall-to-wall, like, ghosts and, like, mm-hmm. Neo Wazakowska solving mysteries and being, like, creeped out at every turn. And it's really much more satisfying if you realize that what it's really trying to do is tell a tragic romantic story.
Yeah, I agree. The trailer actually has quotes from Stephen King, and he's like, how scary it is. And I actually do think that when the movie is scary, it is very fucking scary. I kept putting my hand in my mouth because we were at a big screening, and I was afraid of making sounds that would embarrass me later, because everyone can tell when I have a reaction because I'm not quiet. So, yeah, I think that the horror stuff works. What I was surprised by is it reminded me of, like, Cabin in the Woods, okay? Where, like, the trailers for Cabin in the Woods were so much like, we don't even want you to know what this movie's doing. And then the movie starts and it's actually a comedy? And I was like, oh, this is delightful. Like, for me, I expected this movie to be, like Pan's Labyrinth, like, dark and charging and brooding and upsetting. And then it starts off and it's like, they introduce the gothic horror element and then they go back to who she was before all this stuff. And it's a jaunty Jane Austen thing about a girl who wants to write a book about ghosts. And everyone keeps telling her that really she should be focusing on a husband. And ironically, when she does, she also gets the ghosts. Like, I got really into that story and thought that was really fun. And was wonderfully surprised at how I mean, I don't want to say girly because I feel like that's a word that turns some people off, but this is a beautiful, rousing costume drama that I would gladly watch after watching Pride and Prejudice 2005 and watching Anna Karenina, and then I would watch this.
Yes, but the thing is, with Cabin in the Woods, I feel like it was already attracting a horror audience that would have been, you know, the trailers sold a horror, straight up, you know, Cabin in the Woods horror movie, and then it attracted that audience, but it's an audience that would still appreciate what it was trying to do. Whereas, I think if you went, I think that the Crimson Peak trailers are appealing to a horror audience, like an audience that, like you said, wants to see the Guillermo del Toro thing. And as Perry pointed out, it makes sense why they're marketing it this way. Because if you say, like, oh, this is actually a lot more like Pride and Prejudice or Anna Karenina, a lot of people are going to be like, well, fuck that. I don't want to see that. You know, it's not the kind of movie that you can sell at that level. I want to point out, I think a lot of dudes sell at that level, but
I understand there are women that don't necessarily like those kind of movies. Perry is not typically into those kind of movies, and we'll get into that in a minute. But I think what I'm hearing, though, a lot is that it seems like dudes were annoyed this isn't a Guillermo del Toro dude movie, like you know, giant robots and blah, blah, blah. This is a much more emotional movie. It's much more like his...
Well, did those people watch any of the trailers? I mean, no matter how you saw, how you view this marketing campaign, I kind of don't agree with this whole thing that the trailers were misleading at all, but... Anyone who walked into this movie thinking that it was going to be Pacific Rim is like, I don't know what's wrong with them.
Well, I don't think she means necessarily that they thought it was going to be Pacific Rim. I think she just means that she thought it would be more, that people might have thought that it would be more of a macho horror movie and less costume drama, which is what it really is. I guess
that
is.
Maybe because he just made Pacific Rim, that it's such a weird thing to me to think Guillermo del Toro, oh, macho horror movie. Like, I would just never pair the two things together.
I just meant, like, more macho, less... I basically what I'm just trying to say is I don't think that many people expected to go in and be like, oh, look, it's a period costume romance drama thing with like corsets and like, you know, like I don't think
again, anyone... I think maybe those people just like suffer from selective hearing, because from the start, Guillermo del Toro has been walking around and being like, oh, my kinky gothic horror romance. And he's like, my house and my dresses and my ghosts. Yeah. Like, he's been saying the right things.
Yes. But the marketing team has been selling a different movie. And the thing is, I mean, people like you and me and Christy, like, we read Guillermo del Toro interviews. We, you know, Perry went to the set visit. We know a lot about it going in. But, like, you know, if you weren't following that closely, I think it would be really easy to be fooled into thinking it's more of a horror movie than it is.
I think for us, we think Guillermo del Toro, we think, like, Pan's Labyrinth, and we think about his more kind of, you know, elegant horror movies that have this kind of... This is the thing. I think Guillermo del Toro is a filmmaker who kind of defies being categorized as feminine or macho or whatever, because he plays with both. And I think that... But I think most people know him for Hellboy. And so I think those people coming into this movie are going to be surprised what this movie is actually about. But let's actually get into what this movie is actually about with the official review kickoff. So the synopsis for this is, in the aftermath of a family tragedy, an aspiring author is torn between love for her childhood friend and the temptation of a mysterious outsider. Trying to escape the ghosts of her past, she is swept away to a house that breathes, bleeds, and remembers. And that's a pretty good plot synopsis, with the exception of, I don't feel at any point that the Charlie Hunnam character is an actual romantic rival to Tom Hiddleston. One, because Tom motherfucking Hiddleston, and two, because Charlie Hunnam is a blandsome dude that I literally thought was Garrett Hedlund the entire movie, because I apparently thought they were the same people.
I actually also don't think that the movie positions him as a very strong romantic interest. Like, it's, you know, everyone kind of, they both know that he has a crush on her, and she, like, and everyone knows that, but he doesn't, like, really declare his love for her. Like, it's not as much of a love triangle as
he's like, look at my spooky slides, Edith, and that's about as much of a mood.
They seem more like friends, and he has, like, a mild crush on her.
Yeah. But she moves to, the whole thing is, Edith moves to Crimson Peak to be with Thomas, played by Tom Hiddleston, and his sister, who super obviously hates her, Lucille. And, you know, she quickly gets exposed to the ghosts of Crimson Peak. And another criticism I'm hearing thrown at this movie is that it's predictable. But, like, I don't think it's not trying to be. I think from the start, we know what's going on. And it's about watching Edith discover what's going on. Because it's kind of, we know we're watching a horror movie. She doesn't. She doesn't know she's living it. But I unequivocally love this movie. I thought it was really fun and romantic and exciting. And the more I think about the stories, the more excited I am about it. And above all, I mean, even if it's not the kind of horror people are expecting, it is absolutely beautiful.
It's beautiful, but that doesn't... I don't know. That's probably one of my biggest problems with this movie. And that's something that I was a little worried about on the set visit, just because they were so focused on what this movie looks like and that house. And like, yeah, the house looks great. And the house actually does bleed. That works really well. I think those few shots where we actually see, you know,
it's not play. Shining bleeding either. It's not like walls of blood. It's like it's oozing.
It's like all practical stuff that would make sense to like the way the house was built, even though like, I don't know. It seems a little weird that the whole house is like sitting on a clay mine, because like what sense would that really make? But my biggest problem with this movie, and part of the reason that I didn't find Charlie Hunnam's character, so I wasn't particularly into him and didn't really buy his crush on Edith, was just because all of the characters in this are kind of just, you know, they are who they are. And it's supposed to be this whole journey, especially for Edith and Thomas Sharp, and just how they change and how their relationship kind of changes who they are in their situation. But I didn't really see any chemistry between them. And without
I don't understand that at
all. And without that, there's like almost like no arc to the movie.
I'm astonished. I disagree completely, to be honest with you. And I mean, you know, chemistry is subjective. Clearly, sure. I saw something in it that you didn't.
Oh, I didn't at all. And I also, I had a really hard time thinking that the two of them would get together, because she just looks like a child to me. And he is like a dashing man. And I just couldn't
But all those costume dramas are like that.
I almost kept getting the feeling like Thomas and Lucille were her parents half the time.
Well, I mean, I think they set it up so that those two seem a lot older. But I didn't. Mm-hmm. They didn't read as being so different in age that, like, you know, you are purposely supposed to think that she's younger and more naive than they are, but read it as like she felt like their child or anything.
I thought the ages definitely didn't read right to me. And also, I've been cutting a bunch of interviews for the movie, and at some point I heard Jessica Chastain reference like scars on her face, and I didn't see any scars on her face. Well, they weren't really, like, pronounced very well. No. We also barely even, like, scratched the surface of why she had it. She just had, in this interview, she just had this whole great backstory, and I know for a fact that Guillermo del Toro gave them, like, an insane binder full of details about these characters, and I just didn't see any of that come through in the story at all.
That's so crazy. I feel like it's in every moment. Like, the scars I noticed, and I was like, is that a her thing? Is that a whatever? And then she has a line where she says something, and I'm like, oh, okay, so that's a cue. And, like, all the costumes in the house itself, like, they all have these visual cues that I thought really told who these characters were. Like, Lucille's dresses, to me, spoke volumes about who she is as a person. And I really love that. And actually, Angie and I got into a tangent the other day, just texting back and forth about who Lucille is, in a way that the story sets up so that you can explore on your own kind of after the film and reassess who she is. And I thought that was really beautiful. I mean, and yeah, Angie's right. Chemistry is subjective. But for me, I thought Tom Hiddleston and Mia Wasikowska made a really electric pairing. It reminded me of her and Matthew Good in Stoker, where there's something about it that makes you uncomfortable. But then at the same time, you're like, this is pretty hot.
I mean, I agree that it's not a movie like, you know, Perry, you were talking about how she has, like, pages and pages of backstory that didn't make it into the movie. And you're right, it leaves a lot of it to the imagination. But I feel like, you know, you see enough of it and the performances are strong enough that you get, that you know what you need to know. And you can kind of fill in the blanks. Like, maybe you won't reach the exact same details that she has in her pages and pages of backstory, but you kind of do understand what her story is. And a lot of that is really the performances. Like, I think Jessica Chastain, to me, is the real standout here. Like, I liked Mia Wasikowska, and I liked Tom Hiddleston, but Jessica Chastain, where she's just, like, she's this person that's just kind of, like, burning inside, but she has this really icy exterior, and she does it so well. It's a performance that, at times, is kind of over the top, but in a really enjoyable way that I thought worked really well.
I wish this was more her movie than anything.
I think it's absolutely her movie.
Well, I think she kind of steals the movie. I don't think it was necessarily meant to be hers, but I think that her transition was one of the most effective of all, because even in the beginning, it's like you look at her face and you know she's up to no good, and she hates, like, everybody. Just want shit.
She's wearing the color blood.
At the same
time. Like, she's introduced in this gown that just looks like it is made of silk blood.
At the same time, though, I think that in the beginning of the movie, at least, she expressed just enough warmth to make me think, you know, like, maybe she's not so bad after all. And then when you see what happens to her, you really, you know, you need that to a point. And I think she just did that, like, brilliantly.
But speaking of the warmth, that was another thing that worked really well for me with Tom Hiddleston's character, is that it's really it would have been really easy to make all these characters one note, but they all have a little bit more depth to them than you'd expect. And I do understand your complaint. Like, it's actually a problem I had with his last movie, Pacific Rim, where it felt like, you know, you have these potentially interesting characters and then you're leaving the most interesting parts off the page. But for whatever reason, I felt like it was a lot more effective here. Maybe I was just more into the story.
Yeah, I don't think I was entertained enough here like I was in Pacific Rim.
I was more entertained.
And you know what? I will say, I have to admit, you know, you guys mentioned it before, I was on set and this is one of the first times that I've ever done a set visit and can feel that my disappointment in the movie might be directly related to everything that I know that didn't make it in and everything that I saw. It's like, I couldn't help but to think about it the entire time. It's like the third floor nursery stuff. There was so much more there than what they show in the movie. Like, just so much more detail that made me like have such a much more clear picture of this family and their past. I felt like I walked away with a better understanding after the set visit than I did after seeing the actual movie.
Oh, weird. For me,
I've never had before.
Well, see, for me, I think that, you know, people talk about Del Toro being a visionary filmmaker and about the way that he can do visual storytelling. And I was nervous because the people I knew who saw this movie a few weeks ago for The Junket said they were underwhelmed, said it wasn't that scary, said it wasn't that interesting. We're calling it mediocre. And I completely don't understand that reading. I thought that the house itself is so rich with details. The costumes are so rich with details that it sets up this world I wanted to stay in for hours. I would have been happy if this movie were another hour long, but as it was, I thought it was really beautiful. I thought I understood the characters, and, you know, I'm still thinking about their stories having walked away with it and, like, you know, mulling over the ending and what does the ending mean for the characters, and I was really swept away. I just feel like I think the reason the marketing, to cycle back a little bit, is focusing more on the horror element is because movies like this could be written off as girly, and so it could hurt their marketability. But, you know, we don't think of Pan's Labyrinth as girly, even though it was a movie very much about a little girl's fantasies. Like, this is more romantic than Pan's Labyrinth, but I don't think it's necessarily something that's going to turn off male audiences. I just think that it's a harder sell.
There's a difference between a movie that's girly and a movie that's about a girl, though. Like, Hunger Games is not a movie that people would categorize as girly, even though it's about a girl, whereas Twilight is.
Mm-hmm.
All right, do we want to jump into some spoilers?
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. So, okay, spoilers for Crimson Peak. If you don't want to know about the ending, we'll see you next week.
And now, of course, I forgot the spoiler I just wanted to address.
Was it the incest thing?
I forgot what the jumping off point was. It's something one of you said that sparked this thought. But I thought I got really frustrated with how, like, impulsive all the decision making was. It's like, I get that Edith was in a position where she really had almost no one left in the world but Thomas, and that's why she kind of just, like, packed her shit up and peaced out and went to live with him. But then also I'm thinking, like, towards the end, you know, Lucille's reaction to the whole conversation in her bedroom and what she does.
Wait, what are you talking about?
Spoilers, I guess. So, well, when she freaks out and stabs her brother in the face.
Yeah.
No, that made complete sense to me.
That bothered me a little. Because
it made so much sense to me.
I just don't understand why she would do something like that when he was everything in the world to her.
Well, and that's exactly why.
And when, like, her exact... The whole message of that didn't like, hit me like it should.
Well, to me, it was that, you know, Lucille had done literally everything for him. She had taken beatings for him their whole life. She had basically, as far as she was concerned, they were married. She murdered their mom for him. She did all this for him. And then he has the fucking gall to go out and take their next prey and fall in love with her. Like, that's so insulting. Like, I actually feel for Lucille, even though she is, you know, crazy pants and villainous. I totally understood. Her heart is broken. And it's just like, without him, she literally has nothing. Like, what does she have? She has a house that's sinking into blood mud.
And I mean, you're right that it's not the most like subtle or necessarily realistic way to react, but it's a movie that's all about over the top emotions and over the top action. Yeah, like it's not trying to be a low key indie drama, you know? Like, so that made sense to me. And what I like about it is that like Lucille, sorry, like you said, out,
I'm sorry, go on and then I'll explain. I'm sorry. I just had an emotion. It's fine.
I forgot what I was going to say.
I'm so sorry. That was rude. I was thinking about in the final scene, she has those billowing sleeves and she'd previously talked about like butterflies and things coming out of their cocoons essentially. And I just realized that costume wise, she does that because she's in all these tight bodices and stuff the whole movie. And then at the end when she goes totally bonkers and is just full on like, ha, with the knife, she has like big billowy wings. That just made me really excited. And I'm sorry I derailed your point because of that, but that's why I gasped because I got really thrilled. The
billowy
the
wings
again.
Are important though. Don't worry about it.
I think what I was going to say before someone interrupted me with her gasping. No, I'm just kidding. But I think what I was going to say is that you're right. She's a villain, but she's, and nothing that, you know, her motivations don't excuse her actions. Like, it's like, it doesn't matter what someone does. You could choose not to be a motherfucking serial killer. Mm-hmm. But it's a villain that you feel sorry for, you know, kind of like when you watch like the Avengers and then you feel bad for Loki, even though he's the bad guy and he's trying to destroy Earth. It's kind of like that. Mm-hmm. But the other thing is like, you know, so from her perspective, you see how this is like a really tragic story. From his, it is too. Like, he's not a villain either. He's this guy that since childhood has been caught in this incredibly toxic relationship with this woman who is literally a killer. And then he finally meets this other woman, Mia Wasikowska's character, who offers him a way out into something more joyful and something more normal and something healthier and happier. And then, you know, his toxic relationship just, it won't let go of him and he can't escape. And so from his perspective, it's also a tragedy. And then from Wasikowska's too. And it's
you made it sound like just in that one phrase, like more interesting than I think it comes across in the whole movie. It's like the whole time I knew that that's exactly what they were getting at. But I kind of just like I didn't feel the chemistry and the subtext and all of that, like to bring it all together while I was actually watching it. It's
Can I take that to mean that I am a better storyteller than
you? I will give you a pull quote for your story.
I feel like you pinpointed it because you saw the set visit and you had all these expectations of what you saw on screen. I feel like you were comparing it to the movie you envisioned. And so I feel like that's what's contributing to your opinion. And I totally understand that. It's the first time I've been glad I didn't go on that set visit.
Yeah, it's definitely part of that. And it's a weird feeling because I've never had that on a set visit. Like, I've always said, like, I don't get why people don't review things after they've been on set. But, like, this is kind of, like, one of the first times where I feel like my opinion is tainted because what I know. But this is also one of the first times because of, like, what kind of filmmaker Guillermo del Toro is. I mean, it's probably one of the first times where I've been on set and there's just been, like, so much detail. I mean, like, freaking detail through the roof. And it's just impossible to include that.
Yeah.
Whereas on most other set visits, it's like they're all cagey and they're trying to hide the important details. Mm-hmm. So it was a very different set visit experience. But, you know, I think there's definitely things to praise in this movie. I mean, some of the visuals are incredible. If you flip through any of the stills in this movie, there's so many things that are wall-worthy. I have my Crimson Peak Mondo poster in here that I will certainly never take down because that house is absolutely stunning. But there was, I can't pinpoint specifically what it is, but there's like some like a connectivity layer that I was just kind of cut off from.
It doesn't where resonate I was with you emotionally?
I was like watching the story, yeah, but like I didn't really feel anything that they were feeling. Like, I think most of all, I enjoy Jessica Chastain's performance. I liked the look of the ghosts, which I was very worried about because I heard not so positive things about that. Normally, I'm very picky when it comes to, you know, revealing, you know, practical actors who are then bathed in CG to look ghostly. But I thought these looked really good.
I want to point out that Doug Jones plays one of the ghosts, at least.
Yeah, and then there's also Javier Botet, who did the Mama Ghost. He's fantastic.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
That's like a perfect example, though. Like, seriously, go Google Mama motion test and then look at Mama. It's like they take like the most brilliant physical performance and then they bathe it in digital effects and it just looks so stupid and cartoonish.
See, one, I like Mama better than you did, but we're getting derailed. I do think that the combination of a motion capture performance and the CG ghost worked really well for me, especially combined with a sound design that's like rickety. And it's a really beautiful thing, but we should really wrap. Yeah, so Perry is on the fence about this one.
Perry, fine.
Would you recommend someone see it?
It's fine. I think if you're looking for a horror movie for the holiday, like it's perfectly fine. I don't think it's anything special, but you know, it's entertaining enough.
I fucking loved it. I seriously think it's one of the best movies I've seen. Not just this year, but in years. I think it's beautiful and moving and exciting, and I think it's a very daring movie. And people bitch and moan they want original content. This shit's original. It is pulling from a bunch of influences, but it is very much its own thing.
I would completely recommend that people see it, but with the very major caveat that don't expect a traditional haunted house horror movie because it's not what it is. Go in knowing that it's going to be more of a gothic romance, and then mm-hmm. you'll like it.
Alrighty, so that's a wrap on episode 87 of Popcorn and Prosecco. Please go to iTunes where you can subscribe to the podcast and also comment and rate us over there. We have a website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter, @PopcornProsecco. Please like us on Facebook. And then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Angie, you want to take it first?
Yes, I'm on Twitter, @AJHAN, and I write for /film.com.
Christy?
I'm @ChristyPutchko on Twitter, and you can find my career highlights at decadentcriminals.com.
And you can catch my writing on collider.com, and my Twitter handle is @PNemiroff. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.